Okay, so we're now recording. So I'm David Allen. I'm a city council member. I'm just going to briefly get the meeting going and introduce who's around the table, and then we'll kind of let the auditors and our finance staff kind of take us through the meeting agenda. This is the audit committee meeting for April 18th, 2013. Around the table is myself, David Allen, Councilor Laura Swanson, Finance Director David Marshall, Assistant Finance Director Linda Brown, Citizen Committee Member Ole Olson, and our two auditors. You'd like to introduce yourself for the record?
Brett Rohde.
And Breanne Emmel.
Okay, now at this point I'll just kind of hand it over to David, Linda, and the auditors, and they can kind of take us through the materials we have in front of us.
Like me to start?
Yes.
I'm going to kind of go over the what's in front of you, the SAS 114 letter, also known as the Communication to the Governing Body. And it kind of is a summarized version of the audit report. We issue the report, and there's letters that go along with it. And so this one kind of discusses the purpose of the audit, the responsibilities as the auditors, the responsibilities of management, the responsibilities of the council. It goes into the results and things like that. So I'll just kind of go down that. Purpose of the audit, we do two different audits. One is looks at the generally accepted accounting principles and the accuracy and giving our opinion on the fair presentation of the financial statements. And the other audit is on Oregon municipal law and those regulations and compliance with those regulations. The next couple paragraphs talks about our responsibilities as the auditors. You know, we're working for the council. We have an engagement letter. We talk about planning and performing. And then we go into kind of the bottom of the page there is the results of the audit. And so that's kind of the more important thing that, you know, you look at in the opinion letter. We issued an unqualified opinion, which is a clean opinion, no reservations. So that's exactly what that's what you want to have. And then the second part there, number two, is the Oregon minimum standards part of the audit, and there's no exceptions or issues requiring comment, except as noted on page 57 of the report. And then number three there just talked about we issued a management letter as well, and that's where we note any deficiencies noted there.
Yeah, these have already been done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure we get that clarified, because you said you did this is regarding
the year 2012.
End. Right. The letter says January 4th, 2012. That should be 2013. And you also mentioned our report dated January 4th, 2012. That should probably be, the first paragraph should be 2013.
I didn't notice that.
That's why I was sitting here.
So
we
those two should
year?
Be changed. So, So anyways.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. Okay, then let's make a note of that.
We'll find out that Councilor Allen knows everything.
Yeah.
There is nothing that gets by him.
Yeah.
We've discovered that to our...
And yet this goes through, you know, a few stages of review. So
I do that for a living. I read through stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I do when I'm not on the council. So okay. That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah, so it's the 2012 audit, and yeah, it should be dated 2013.
Right? Yeah.
And then below that, it kind of talks about management responsibilities. And then this is on page two. And there's a few things as the audit that we disclose to the council. That we're required to as part of our auditing standards. And so if there's any difficulties in completing and performing our audit with management or anything like that, we'd have to just let you know that. And there were none. There was a significant amount of corrected or uncorrected misstatements. We'd have to let you know that. There weren't a significant amount. If there's any disagreements with management, we would let you know there weren't any disagreements. Management issues a representation letter. And if management consulted with any other independent accountants and they gave their opinion on something, then we would have to let you know about that, but there were no such consultations that we're aware of. And then below that, we go into some of the other matters, future and auditing issues. These are just a few GASB pronouncements that we make sure that management's aware. We work with management on making sure they're up to code on some of the new standards. Those are a few that we just mentioned to management that they can look over and that might affect the future audit report. So that's pretty much it as far as like a quick summary of the report itself and a couple pages in the letter that we issue. Are there any questions on that letter?
Well, I'd like to have a chance to read the whole thing, but
Just one general question. So David gave us a presentation, David Marshall, back in early April. He gave us a brief review of the Urban Renewal Agency and the city audit reports. And I just actually asked David before the meeting when the council is going to get copies of the 2012 fiscal year audit reports. He apparently said you're still finalizing the city audit report. And I guess, is that going to be available soon?
So it's been issued, and I sent a copy. So I think it should probably be in the mail if you're waiting for the actual hard copies.
Okay.
But we have an electronic copy.
The city and Urban Renewal?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So
we actually got the hard copy for the city today.
Okay, good. Okay, well, that's an update from when we spoke earlier.
Yeah.
Okay,
I
good.
I didn't know that.
Good.
Well, we have the Urban Renewal for
several okay.
days now. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good. Thanks. I guess a general question that I think David has mentioned, and I think he's mentioned this to us based on your recommendations, is, mm-hmm. and it's about the audit committee. You know, we formed the audit committee 2 years ago, which I think is a good practice, and that's what the League of Oregon Cities and others suggested. But over the course of the past couple of years, and I've been on it since its inception, and so has Ole, it sounds from David that David Marshall that. We need to, as a council, as an audit committee, and as a council, we need to be more proactive in talking about the audit during the course of the year. So, for instance, this audit committee meeting will have minutes, but I think it's good practice from what you said, David, is that at the next council meeting or whenever the minutes are prepared, we kind of go through it in some detail with the council as audit committee members to keep them informed. And then I think you also mentioned at the presentation in April that perhaps during the yearly review of the audit reports, you would like to see the committee members do that rather than yourself?
I don't think the finance director should do it.
So,
I think
I'm just curious. That seems to be a recommendation from the auditors as well. Is there anything you'd like to add to that concept? Because it's kind of a new concept for the council to be more proactive in not just reviewing the audits, but to actually convey that information to the other council members and the public. Is anything you'd like to add to that concept? Because it is kind of new for the council.
Yeah, I mean, the role of the audit committee is something that, they can, in between the auditors and the council and kind of delivering that message. Another thing that audit committees can do is actually audit the books, or ask for, certain things and do their own kind of audit, I guess. So that's something you could look at, too. If there's any, procedure, if you wanted to ask for certain things of Linda or David to look at, that just to kind of review maybe that they're approving certain bank reconciliations or journal entries and things like that. There's a level of that you could do.
So right now we're scheduled to meet only twice a year. We have this field review, and then when you guys are towards the end of finishing your report in October, mm-hmm. we go through that. So are you saying, and I'm just trying to get this clear to convey to the council, between those meetings, we could convene the audit committee if we as a committee, the three of us, decide that we want to look into some issue further that maybe is brought to our attention, and then meet, without you here, but meet with our staff and then go through whatever questions we have as an audit committee as part of that process.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, because I kind of had that, middle of the year, in between, and then look at maybe the comments that we made and see if anything that that they could do or if those are being affected. And
see, for example, David, and you know the reason why, because yeah. Linda has to do everything, and I think they confirmed she has to do way too much.
Yeah.
So the reconciliations are late, and they've been noted as late for years. Now we are finally getting the staffing, which they shouldn't be, because somebody besides Linda can do them. But when we see all that, I go through all of that and I say, yep, we need to start doing that. And then at the saturation level of where we are, I may not look at it again for months, because all of their suggestions are good, but it takes an additional effort to do it. Now we think with how we're going to be staffed from June 3rd on, that should start getting better. But unless somebody from outside says, how are you doing on this minor deficiency of bank reconciliations? and actually checks, it's not that we would mislead you intentionally.
Yeah.
It's just that we hadn't thought about it because the crush of doing business doesn't require that we do bank reconciliations. The audit does, but Linda's the only one who can do them, especially the big complex ones of our major accounts. She's the only one who can do them. She's got quite literally more important things to do just to get through a normal day, get people paid and that sort of thing. So that, I wouldn't even call it pressure, that outside interest in what we're doing is a very positive thing. And to me, much more positive than something like, let's look at your $5 accounts payable transactions.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really not that important.
Mm-hmm.
That we're doing bank reconciliations is that important.
Okay.
And so if you choose even randomly, I was once at Economic Development Corporation that our lenders, the Small Business Administration and others, required without notice, and I did the payroll there, without notice, that somebody else in the corporation did the payroll to see that, one, I wasn't cheating or lying, and two, I wasn't making any mistakes. Where you get in this mode of doing everything the same way over and over again, and you discover you either get sloppy, or you get tired, or you're not paying that much attention. So outside interest is a good thing. It's just that until the staffing takes place, it puts an extra burden on us that we really don't have the ability to meet. But I concur with that, absolutely. I hadn't thought about it, but I concur with that because it makes us do things that we may not do on our own.
Mm-hmm. Would it be helpful then to have a punch list of from a given point to the next meeting that we have kind of an idea of some of those items that we'd want to look at?
Well, and you see them under minor, you call them minor deficiencies?
Or yeah, well, they call it significant deficiencies.
Significant deficiencies, but they're not weaknesses as such. They're significant deficiencies that probably you should look at, if not monthly, quarterly, and say, okay, how are you guys doing? And whether you actually investigated it or asked would be up to you, probably.
Yeah, and I thought that would be better than to say a topic has been brought up about XYZ. Well, we probably want to follow up on that anyway. But if no topic was ever brought up, you'd still have to default back to some sort of list of deficiencies or minor deficiencies to double check on.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in the management letter, the other letter that you have in front of you, I think, do you have both of them or just one?
Just one. The management letter that would have been the one you created, David?
No, this is not the MD&A.
Oh, okay.
This is their letter to you.
Then this is where it shows us the significant deficiencies and the best practices. And so one of the best practices is where it kind of is talking about governing body monitoring and encouraging the council to participate in more than just the budget adoption and things like that, or encouraging them to ask questions. And it does reference making a checklist of questions and benchmarks that you want to ask the staff, just so you're not accepting everything that they give you as fact, and just kind of doing your due diligence in showing interest in asking questions on the numbers that they give you.
Mm-hmm. 2003 at the beginning. So I got a quick question. This David wanted me to bring this up, David Marshall, when we spoke earlier. So I guess a quick question. I see that these letters were prepared right after the first of the year. And I know our goal is to get the audits finished by the end of December. But we didn't get the report. We didn't really get the formal reports back from David until, earlier in this month. So I guess my question is, these letters were obviously prepared in January, but these were prepared while you were still finishing and completing the actual audit report for finalization, which we haven't received, obviously, until most recently.
Well, and we're preparing things in the fall and December, January, and then it goes through so many review processes, and that's where it can take a while. And so we had a draft of the report and of the letters in January. And sometimes we'll update the date, but it's not always that important. And so as it goes through review, we have a compliance reviewer that after we work on a compliance reviewer, part of the partner, that takes a while to go through the partner. So there is the date of the report and the letters is always, it can be a few weeks, a month before you actually would receive it, because there are drafts that take place.
One of the things I'm curious about is that this says for the year ended June 30th, 2012. We're a year behind. I mean, I realize what a fiscal year is, but we're coming up on the next end of the next fiscal year, so what's the balance there? I mean, this is 2012.
Yeah, well, you're always going to issue, I mean, we're always looking at the prior year, so we're always going to be, you know, and right now we're here for interim work of 2013, and then, you know, usually we'll get issued around, you know, November, December, and this one did go a little bit longer than we had anticipated.
So normally it's given out earlier than this?
Normally you'd like to see it, yeah, in about December, in January.
That's right, you did say it. Yeah, that's right, sorry.
What we'd ideally like is the audit committee to have this review with the council in at the December. There's usually just one council meeting in December,
right,
to have it then.
Right.
As kind of a side light to this, this is the time of year when you mentioned anything to Linda and me, we're actually in three different years. We're in 2014, 2013, and 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an exaggeration. Sometimes we'll ask, what year are you talking about? Because you do have this kind of delay. I mean, there's going to be several months delay no matter what, because of just how long it takes to do the audit and then for them to put it together. This was unfortunate because I more or less promised the council that after 15 years of not having it ever done on time, we'd get it done on time. And we did.
In 2011, we did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. In 2012, we were on our way, and things kind of unraveled, and it's really nobody's responsibility and everybody's, but we've already moved up this, the audit that would be in October to the last week in September now, I think, with the goal of doing just what we said.
So 2013 will be on time, is what you're saying.
It had better be. Yeah, because, I mean, Oregon State, in a school district, it's much more critical because they won't get their January payment unless the audit's done, and that's what I've learned to do, and so by December 31st, I want it all done.
Yeah.
Because it forms the baseline. Linda and I will come up and say, we think these are the beginning fund balance. We think these are the ending fund balances for 1 year, therefore the beginning fund balances for next year. But to me, that's 50% probability. Until we get their audit, we don't know, and we can't do anything with the funds and be comfortable with it until we get an audited number. I'd like to have that by December 31st because we're starting audit budget stuff by late January.
Oh, yeah.
The latest.
That's
the
important. So we got, that was the issue we wanted to at least put on the record, was everyone's understanding that getting these audit reports done by the end of the year is important for David, the finance department, and the council, and the budget process itself. So I think that's our goal, is to have everything kind of line up so we're not just guessing, we're actually, we've got some certainty in the figures we're looking at. So,
and I think the timing of, if we go in late September instead of in October, that should alleviate some of the pressure that we're having from other clients, and I think it should speed up. And
good.
And then, like this year, you know, it fell into almost into tax season where our partners are looking at tax, and so then the work, it takes a while to get through the management and things like that. So I think moving it up, I think by December 31st is definitely a
good.
Can I ask a kind of a business question that has nothing to do really with our city stuff? How are you guys contracted? Is it a bid process?
It was originally. I mean, not since I've been here, and that's another issue.
What?
I think all professional consultants and firms, I think the city should go out, whether it's auditing, whether it's actuarial, whether it's insurance, well, insurance may be a little different. What you normally tend to do in a school district, attorneys, for example, in the school district I've been in, no matter how good your school transportation was, your food service, if it's contracted out, no matter how good they are, you go out every 3 to 5 years. Because how do you know that there's not somebody else as good who's less expensive? And our obligation is the taxpayers, ultimately.
Right.
I mean, these guys have been great. And they've been accurate, and they've been helpful. And it's not a personal slant towards anything. It's saying, it's been years. I mean, I got to my last school district, it had been 10 years. They'd never gone out to bid.
Mm.
And there was kind of a complacency there that I didn't appreciate, because we were actually violating IRS code in our payroll, and nobody had said anything. So everybody can be complacent after a while, and so you just try to keep both the city and everybody who works for the city from being complacent.
Yeah. So how long have you guys been on board?
It's been 5 years.
Yeah.
I think you talked about.
We're running up for another contractor then?
We actually have a draft RFP now.
Okay.
And
well,
I mean, it's, I mean, that should be standard for most professional firms. And I mean, since we have experience with them, given that the cost may be very similar between others, they would have the inside edge.
Yep.
But not to do it simply because we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings is not, I mean, we're a public organization.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And what if you got good services and you save $7,500 a year? But see, we wouldn't even know that.
Right. I guess when you made the statement that it was hard to, your firm with a, sounded like a backlog and getting Newport through a couple of different things, and it kind of makes warning bells go off, because I liked to have a firm that works with us as if we're the most special thing in the whole world and get things through. So that was my warning bell right there.
And it's typical for most firms to have the set of review processes that we do, and not, they're not going to have a lot of compliance people. We have our 2 to 3 compliance people, and a firm our size is going to be pretty similar. And so they're going to be overseeing a lot of different clients. And they're not coming out to the audits with us, so they're able to look over a little bit more, but they're still looking over a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I understand completely, but still, it always just rings little bells. So.
Yeah, we have our review, you know, we have different, so many stages of review. You know, some smaller firms, we might just have, you know, one person working on it, and it doesn't really go through the review process.
Yeah.
We try to make sure a number of eyes look at it and catch anything that,
oh,
that
sure.
should be included. In things.
But then again, we have to keep our timelines for us, our city, too. So
yeah.
We depend on you.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it was, you know, partly it was our fault, partly, you know, it was, you know, I don't want to point anything, but I think we're on the right stage right now.
I told David that. I said, yeah, but we're partly to blame for that.
Well, not
and,
really.
But you, that's almost not the issue.
No.
And, you know, I kind of look at it a little different. If I call up a firm or an individual and ask for services and they have no backlog at all, I wonder why don't they have a backlog? They have no business. They have no customers. I kind of like somebody who's got a backlog because they do their job well and there's a lot of people signed up, and then it's just a question of scheduling with the firm that's proven itself. As opposed to, hey, can you do the audit this year? Sure. Sure, we'll do the audit. They don't have any other customers. I don't know if we want them.
Well, I guess that's a point. I mean, that's absolutely a point, but I come from a viewpoint that if you're efficient, you don't have those backlogs.
And it was my first year last year as the team lead, and so I was kind of learning. And so I think I feel very comfortable about this, where we're at this year, and getting it done on time.
Great. Okay, sorry. I just wanted to ask.
No, good questions.
Yeah. And actually, as far as the RFP goes, we decided to delay taking that out until after we finish this process for this year. So I think when I spoke with David, he feels pretty comfortable with this kind of with moving the timeline forward into September. Timing won't be an issue, and when we take it off our RFP, it's going to be more about the typical issues that you look at as far as the cost of services and so forth. That, like any RFP, that we'll be looking at. So
now, what's the initial? What's the acronym stand for?
Request
for proposal. Oh, request for proposal. Yeah, RFP. Yeah, and so I mean, I think our goal is to. I think as David clearly stated at our last council meeting, his goal is to make sure we're not late this year. So.
No, I don't want to be late. I can't.
Anyways,
stand.
He made that really clear to
see,
himself as well.
See, moving it up, with Linda having the help we think she'll have.
Yeah.
It would have been even that 1 week would have been difficult. Because remember, we closed the year. We continued closing the prior fiscal year in July and August. I mean, it doesn't close on June 30th, and all the old transactions are gone. You've actually got 2 closing months. And so to have 2 closing months and then to have an audit in 3 weeks later, it can be difficult.
Oh, yes.
We wouldn't even have offered that had we didn't think she's getting the help she's going to be needing.
So, David, my only question is, even though the audit report was somewhat late this year for fiscal year 2012, you still feel it was done with enough time for you to look at the results as part of the next year's budget process?
Yes, but barely.
Okay, but yeah.
Yes.
But there was still a little time left, so you weren't totally in the dark.
As he indicated, you have lots of things that indicate
certain
things. And I had the financial data start writing the management discussion and analysis. And you're maybe at a 90 or 95% confidence level. But every once in a while, when you have to move all your capital projects from the capital projects fund to your entrepreneurial funds into several million dollars, you always realize there can be something that happens that you hadn't anticipated.
Okay.
And you just try to minimize that, obviously.
Okay. Good.
The computer update, you're on track to getting everything out for that new program?
More or less. I mean, certainly the budgeting, the cash receipts for the most part, yes. We still have a purchase order system, which is probably going to be less a technical challenge than a psychological one to a city that's never had a purchase order system. That's a little interesting.
So you haven't started that yet?
No, we have not. Well, because of audit and budget stuff.
Right, okay.
We've really got to get past
that. Well, I was just curious because I am very interested in that purchase.
Believe me, so am I. We can't encumber anything. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
When you first find out about an expenditure after it's been spent,
right,
you could tend to say that your control mechanism for cash disbursements is non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that simple.
And you talked about these purchase orders, how do I say this? You didn't want them for the minor things like pencils, but you wanted them for the major things.
We want them for everything, but for things like England Marine Supply.
Blanket purchase order.
Blanket purchase order. You put a $10,000 blanket purchase order there, and then you get all the 10-cent items and $15 items that you want, as opposed to an individual transaction each and every time.
So a blanket purchase order, any department can use that particular blanket.
Yes, although you'll see it primarily with Public Works, but any department
right,
can.
Yeah. Right, okay.
I mean, because they're the big purchaser
right.
We've got, but a blanket purchase order makes sense for anybody who has numerous small transactions. I mean, to me, I've always looked at it as kind of like petty cash. You don't. There's some things you don't have to formalize.
Right.
And that would be one of them.
Hey, Mark.
But, no, we need to do that.
Okay.
Do you have an extra?
Well, I guess I'd like to be helpful in doing that.
Extra copy?
Okay. Yes. I'm going to...
So just a note of... Councilor Mark Sillings has arrived. And Mark's an alternate, but we invited him just in case one of the other committee members can't make it at a future meeting. Mark will be somewhat familiar with the issue. So, and there's only three city council members here, so we're not having a city council meeting. We're only having an audit committee meeting.
Again, we planned this,
no, there's just an audit committee quorum. There's not a city council quorum.
Too funny.
So just want to make sure that's clear.
Not to make a quorum anywhere.
Well, just want to make sure that's clear. So... I was looking at your management letter. The significant deficiencies, I remember you noted those at our meeting in November.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Laura and Oli was there, but Laura wasn't. I'm just curious, have those four items in that, on pages 1 and 2 of David, have those been sufficiently addressed?
I don't have that in front of me. Linda, you probably know better than
I'm looking at the second letter that was just distributed, the management letter, with, and it lists the four significant deficiencies mm-hmm. they noted.
1, 2, it's at the bottom of
and
one.
Then, yeah, have those been, have those, and those were noted last November, so
yeah.
Between last November and today, have those, if any of those been at least addressed, or you looked at how you're going to address those?
David brought up the bank reconciliations.
Yeah, I understand.
There's still a problem. They
right.
You know, unfortunately, when these guys come in, that's when I'm pushing to get them done. We're hoping, like he says, with the new people that I'll be able to toss that off to other people. The accounts payable, I still can do everything in accounts payable if I need to. One thing you need to realize is we are a small city. You know, even though we have more people in the department, there's always somebody that needs to have kind of a, be able to do those things if somebody is not here.
Correct.
And
cross-training.
Cross-training. Right. And payroll-wise, they've always been giving me a bad time because I can add new people in payroll. We got an HR person in January.
Right.
The moment JJ came on board, I showed him how to put people in, and I says, that's it, and took my name off so I can no longer put people into payroll.
So that one's been corrected.
The one for court, Court is the other thing in Cassell. We are not up and running in our new Cassell yet. They're in the process of rewriting their court package, and so we're hoping within the next couple of months we'll be able to be up and running in court. But until then, making it so Kay can't make adjustments, that means she also can't make take payments, and we can't have that happen.
Right.
So Kay does not make adjustments in court.
So court is associated with the financial department because you guys do take money in for them.
Yes, and also our court, the court clerk also works in, out of our department.
Okay.
Yes.
Of these four, then, how many are going to be carryovers for this current?
If I heard correctly, at least three of them.
At least three. One's correcting you.
The other three are still. Yeah, the payroll, because she can no longer enter new employees in the system. That one would probably be removed, and the other three would probably be carrying over. Yeah. And it's just interim right now, so we can come back out and find out. We'd have a better idea of what would be on the management letter.
And I just want to note, I mean, we are talking about significant deficiencies, but in the letter, it does note that those are not as significant as what they reference as material weaknesses. So just to put it in context, it's an important issue, but there are things they would categorize even more serious as material weaknesses, and there were none noted in our audit report for that. So.
And good for you guys.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd hate to try and do this.
Just to finish up going through your letter, on page 2, best practices, your first item does talk about the more active role you would like to see the city council take. I guess your last paragraph references the periodic monitoring activities between these kind of meetings, and you said you could help staff put together a list of questions or checklists to go through. I guess my only response would be, I think the audit committee wants, and the council wants, to be more active even between these two meetings per year with the auditors. Mm-hmm. If you and the finance staff, department staff, feel you can come up with some checklist that would be beneficial to the audit committee, I think that would be a good thing, because I really am relying on you to kind of let me know what are the things we need to be looking for during the course of the year. And with our staff, David, maybe you can do it yourself, or I suppose if you feel you can get some idea from the auditors, it'd probably be a good idea to maybe start putting that into effect before we meet with the auditors in September. Maybe sometime over the summer, have a in between check-in, like we just noted earlier. So
yeah, just rechecking and saying, are there any issues right now that I need to be aware of?
So could that checklist be prepared? I mean, I figure you guys could probably put that together this weekend. So
I think our goal is to be an asset to you guys. Whatever we can do to help, and let us know.
Again, Linda and I can be so overwhelmed that we don't think about simple things. And if you don't have objective outside eyes that are dispassionate and not buried in the day-to-day stuff, look at it. It may not be looked at. And it's just that simple. And I'm not using that as an excuse, but I think
it's just a reality.
You get staffs that are just trying to get through the day. They're trying to get payroll done, they're trying to get payables done, and frankly, they don't care if the assistant finance director can get into payroll, because she may be the only one who can. Until we got an HR person, there was no other way for it to be done. But as benefits started being offloaded on her shoulder, because she was the benefits person in addition to being the court clerk, I mean, it was an insane amount of work. And so, even though it showed up that she could access this and do that, my thing is, yeah, and what's the alternative? Well, you guys are finally giving us the alternative, which is two additional people and an HR person, so that you can actually have the staff that allows separation of duties and a more objective look at this stuff without everything going on one person's shoulders, because that's just unconscionable, and you've heard me say that before. Mm-hmm. So I think you'll see things a year from now a great deal different than they are right now.
And that checklist and those questions, we actually, our office is trying to kind of form, just give examples to clients, so
yeah.
We can probably give you that, and then you can look it over, customize it to how you see fit. And so
I like that. And for item 2, the fidelity insurance coverage, I remember we talked about that. David, do you have any comment? It sounds like we have sometimes more on hand than what we have insured. Do you see that being an issue? Because it does talk about whether we need to balance the risk versus the exposure.
I think most organizations have that same issue.
Okay.
And it's something that to me is more theoretical than practical. It's something you think about, but I've known where I've been, that's always been an issue. And I think things would have to be a lot. I think an unusual set of circumstances would have to occur before that became something that was really a problem. But you guys might think differently.
And this is just a best practice. And the best practice that we have is not necessarily to increase it. It's just to evaluate. It is, you know, Nan talked about recommending that you examine this exposure risk each year. And so that's just the best practice we're trying to do.
So what is Fidelity Insurance?
What is it? You
probably it's like a... like an employee theft crime insurance.
Kind of like a bond.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yes.
Right.
And so you could sometimes you could, you know, you could put a bond on Linda or David, and so there's other ways around.
Right.
Because you're going to have, you're not going to insure the entire amount of that you have in the bank.
Cause right.
That's not
right.
Really worth
okay.
it.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I knew what the term was.
Yeah, and bonds are typically utilized for those kind of issues as well.
So yeah, you can talk to your insurance guy about
that. There is a bond on David.
Okay. Yeah. I was assuming it would be.
Yeah.
Just David, though?
Do you feel left out?
Just David.
I'm just wondering, is it... does it
on Jim?
Is there...
I don't know.
Is there an addition?
I know there's one on yours because I add it to our budget every year.
Well, I guess if you have a bond, what's the additional cost for adding additional parties? You have to get a separate bond for each person, or could you...
I don't know.
My own experience in the school district is always the superintendent and the business manager who has a bond.
Okay.
On Jim, it's just I do the finance budget. Yeah.
That's something we should probably check and see.
Yes.
And if he isn't bonded, we probably should get him bonded.
Yep, that's a good point.
Yep. Good. Mark, did you, I know you just got here, but we're just going through, a recap of last year's report and the scheduling for this year's report. I think our next meeting with the auditors, these folks will be in September.
Yeah, probably the last week there when I'm... usually you meet after the final, you know, as we finish field work.
Okay.
That'd be the end of September.
Remember that questionnaire you wanted to hand out and have filled in by council members?
Mm-hmm.
I think I actually didn't fill that out and give that back to you. What was the response? Was I the only one, or did you not get all them back?
I don't know if we gave it to everyone. Usually we just need at least one back, but we try to encourage.
Did you get more? Did you get one back at least?
I think that one from the mayor, but it wasn't until that was one another one that went.
That was
one about
February or something. Maybe.
Yeah,
that got lost somewhere, but we had a new mayor by the time.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's even Mark McConnell who sent that, or
it was
Mark McConnell.
Was too much. Well, is that? Because I've gotten two of those, and it's slipped through the cracks, and it has certain questions about, can't remember all the questions, but is that something you still want to have done for this current audit year?
Yeah, we usually send that out, and I don't know if you sent them out this year, this week, have you? We usually send it out, you know, around interim, and then just try to make sure we get it back, you know, in the fall, by the fall. You can send it back now, or if we haven't gotten any responses back when we're here in September, we'll try to remind you, maybe send them out again or something like that.
So I'm pretty good at filling out.
Yeah,
what sort of questions
it's just basically, and I can pull it up here, it talks about...
pretty pointed questions, yeah, I'll put it that way. Pretty pointed.
I was guessing they probably...
They are.
Some of the questions, do you know of or suspect any fraud? Is there any areas that you're concerned about? How do you communicate to your staff that fraudulent behavior isn't tolerated? Any litigation that we need to be aware of? Things like that. You know, how often do you review, financial reports, and what do you find useful in that? Just to kind of make sure that, if there's anything we need, if they have issues or concerns, that they, communicate that with us.
So it's sort of like digging down to maybe some issues that really aren't making
some
it
alerts
to the surface that should be.
Is this also done with department heads or just council?
We have a different questionnaire for the staff, and so we sent that to the...
and to the city manager.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And our city attorney provides a litigation update, which goes into any exposure from litigation-related activities, and that's a separate letter that you get from them.
Yeah, we send that out in September.
And that usually, so the litigation stuff is usually covered from the city attorney's end. Mm-hmm.
So if we were to say we suspect some kind of fraud somewhere, so what happens then? You contact us individually, and we say, point a finger.
Well, yeah, I mean, if there's any issues, concerns that, you know,
I said pointed stuff.
You know, it might not necessarily need to be, you know, shown on the financial report, but it's something that, you know, we could look into and make sure that, you know, if there's any concerns, you know, to voice those and make sure that we, you know, touch those and communicate that with staff if we need to. Or
sometimes there's additional procedures we can add into our testing too to look into that further.
Well, I've met everybody in absolutely no problems as far as I'm concerned, but I was just curious.
I guess I can say even though I've only been officially on board 3 months, if there were to be a question such as, you know, is it your opinion that your fiscal responsibility and controls are moving in the right direction, I certainly would already feel comfortable answering an affirmative to that.
No kidding.
People have really been working hard to improve things recently, and it's starting to show. And better yet, I think it's being communicated to the counselors very well, exactly where we're at, you know, where we need to knuckle down, and try to do as best we can with the resources we have.
I'm curious, since, you know, not being a council member really, but being also on the budget committee and the audit committee, if you would like to share, what's your perspective of how you've watched things progress over the past couple of years? Because you have been observing this as a citizen member.
So. Yeah, and I've had a number of sit-downs with Mr. Marshall, and one just trying to get a big picture of the programs. But I've been impressed, especially on areas on the new computerized program. I've been used to working programs that had blanket purchase orders and pretty detailed budgeting processes on the federal level. And I can see where we didn't have auditors, that was the inspector general that did ours. And they would flock in about once every other year because they all enjoyed going to national parks. But I thought, I still think that David's work is really on track. There's still some areas, and I think, like, especially with this upcoming purchase order process, and I think he's absolutely right there. That's more a culture change than anything else. But once you get into that, it allows. We were never allowed to purchase something without approval. Unless it was on a blanket purchase order, and even there you had to bring the receipt back right away. So there was, and then we had a monthly accountability, or not accountability, but a process to account for what we had spent had to be in each month, and it had to match up then with the receipts. And then we actually had all approvals had to be co-signatured at the end of the month by the supervisor of that division or department. So I think that particular item there will end up being the biggest of your culture change issues coming
up. It'll be a shock. I mean, even to hear about it, people are shocked. Yeah. And the last council basically in a meeting publicly said, basically ordered me to make sure that happened, as if I need to be ordered, because it has to be. Yeah. But I will need council support for that, because it's not only blanket purchase orders, but blanket purchase orders that replace purchase cards. What do we call them?
P cards.
We used to issue a P card to every employee who arrived here. There should be maybe two per department.
Yeah.
And that's going to even be more of a culture shock.
Credit cards.
I think what you'll discover, you know, like so many things, the change part is really hard. But then those same employees down the road are going to be wondering how they ever got along without the new system, because I come from a really rigid state purchase order system too. And, you know, I was with the state long enough that I remember once upon a time, you know, we could have, you know, $25, $30, $40 of petty cash around that got tracked a little more loosely. And and that was like 25 years ago. You know, I mean, 15 years ago, you couldn't even do it anymore. You know, but what has to come along with that, if employees aren't going to get really upset about it, is a system that can, you know, I mean, purchase orders is one aspect, reimbursements is another. As long as you can have a system where they're not out there waiting, you know, 3 or 4 months to get reimbursed for something, generally it ends up being an advantage because it's all computerized. You can go out there and track it yourself. You're not hanging on to little paper receipts all over the place and losing them. You know, I mean, it's that was probably my biggest shock is when you announced that night that the city had never had one. I'm like going,
what? Shock when I got
yeah. You know.
They just said, it was unimaginable to me.
How could you possibly know what you're buying? You know?
Yeah.
So. You're almost going to have to go through some sort of mandatory training program.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that. The training is going to precede the implementation by quite a bit.
Yeah.
And we have two departments, IT and police, who will do manual purchase orders because they think it's a shame not to. I mean, again, the approval of an expenditure before it's spent is pretty basic, and yet we don't have anything like that.
You know, it can go hand in hand with the removal of these miniature Visa cards, too, because employees that are, I get the impression that employees that are used to using those.
Oh, yes.
They don't realize that when they go to a site where they're using it, sitting right there off on the right-hand side or the left-hand side is a perfectly accessible purchase order number and whatnot. That's just as quick, if not quicker. And you no longer have to worry about why you need that card. I mean, it's not very many sites that won't accept either. You know, if that's the case, then obviously it's somebody who doesn't like working with government.
We found that over the years that the more that you laid out your year's budget properly on your expenditures, especially supplies, materials, that was the key to that process working well. You have to have you have to have it programmed in so that you understand that you've got X amount of expenditures that are you have on a regular basis that you know you can program this into your budget and your monthly applications and how you apply that. I'm retired, you know. I don't have to do that anymore.
Now, with a blanket purchase order, is that where potential abuses could occur?
No, because it's handled the same as the petty cash thing. You have, let's say, England Marine Supply. We order a lot of things from that. And let's say that the average annual transaction is $10,000. So I go in, and I have a $45 transaction. And again, it's been 5 years since I've done any of this, because it's been a long time. But basically what happens now is that blanket purchase order has got $10,000 minus whatever number I said, $50. And they'll come back with a receipt, and now it's $9,950. But there's nothing different about it in that you doubt had $50 taken out against the blanket purchase order, you've got a receipt for $50. It's a self-balancing act. What it enables you to do, though, is depending on how often you pay, you've got 12 of those transactions for any 1 month,
right.
But you just pay it once.
Right
now, we pay it continually.
And then you have markings for which departments made all the various
purchases.
So the receipt that I thought I heard you say that an employee has to bring back to their department, that isn't automatically shot through the computers, between computers?
And I'd have to think about how, we don't even know how this is going to work in your system.
Yeah.
But I mean, it basically balances itself. And how different departments use it, because we have several departments that use probably 8, 10, a dozen vendors almost daily.
Right.
It's just that now people can walk in literally with a City of Newport ball cap and charge something.
Literally
do that, and we have to put an end to that.
Right.
There's no indication that there's been an egregious that anybody is really taking advantage of that, but they could. I mean,
it's a small town.
People have known each other for a long time, and you make them charge against the purchase order. You get rid of these P cards that we have, and I've had department heads call me up, and they're just furious. Well, because it's easy. You got a P card. It's just like my credit card. I just charge it anywhere. I don't really pay any attention.
But see, under a blanket purchase order, all you have to know is the number.
Yeah.
And your department, yeah. And you just tell them. You don't have to carry the card. That's you know, right. The only thing, one thing that I've witnessed that vendors locally seem to be pretty good about, there was a time about 3-4 years ago where all of a sudden county employees were getting asked for, you had to have your ID. Mm-hmm. And that was simply because something had happened right around that time where some people were trying to, you know, get away with some county purchases. But as soon as the problem went away, all the local vendors relaxed that.
Yeah.
You know? Plus, I mean, it's a small town. They get to know who you are anyway. But, but usually they're, you know, they're pretty good. So this concern that another concern employees come up with is somehow this plastic guarantees a purchase that, you know, the clout of being a staff member and having an officially filed blanket purchase order doesn't, you know, but one is probably more powerful than the other, you know.
Getting back to the blanket purchase orders, you said, do I understand correctly that the employee has to bring back a receipt?
Well, I'm not sure about that.
I think there should be a receipt.
But I guess what I was looking for was knowing how things get lost. if the computers could talk to each other, like England Marines talk to your computer somehow, and that's the receipt.
And probably, though, you want them to bring back a receipt or a packing slip type.
You do want that.
Type.
Yes.
And then at the end of the month, England would send us a bill that says, these are everything on the purchase order, and we would pay from that.
So you still want the paper copies to do in the hand?
Paper copies.
Okay.
It's almost like a double check system, mm-hmm. because the vendor is sending into your financial department a complete record of when all the purchases were. Some of them actually ask you to they keep separate department accounting so they can add a code to it. And then that employee, if they're a department head or something, normally they're the ones who are kind of signing off on the receipt that in fact their budget covers that amount. Some departments in the county that have a lot of employees, basically all those receipts are signed and handed in to the supervisor or whoever, and then those go into finance of the package.
Yeah.
But each of them is being tracked in two different directions.
Just a quick question. So one of our agenda items is results of the preliminary field audit, which would be this year's.
This week.
So I know we've talked about what last year and kind of the issues that came up. In connection with that, has anything surfaced in your work this week that you'd like to bring to our attention, even though obviously the audit year isn't done yet?
No, mostly the same stuff. Bank reconciliations, kind of just the delay of being reviewed and prepared. Other than that, it was basic. Most of it's the same kind of same small things that the thing that would show up in the report at this point. Besides the unlimited access, I think some of the journal entries I think may have been reviewed. Maybe some late, so that might be something that we might look at final again.
What was delayed?
Like the review of journal entries. There's any adjustments certain getting those approved after the fact.
Do we have an excuse that David was out for 8 weeks?
Linda, it wouldn't make any difference. Linda has this sadistic side to her. She likes to bring in boxes of journal entries this thick. And
hey, you give me back.
David, when the final audit report comes in for each of the years, do you then go through and itemize the deficiencies and develop a action plan to make correction to those and then provide those to the council?
Yes and no. I certainly go through them all. They haven't changed substantially in the 3 years I've been here because the same problem is the same problem, and it's a staffing problem. Mm-hmm. We've never provided any feedback to the council, as far as I know, in 3 years on what or when we fixed it, because we haven't really fixed very much.
We got one.
We started, and it'll get a lot better over the next year. But we have not done that because it wasn't possible to really fix any. But we should do that. I mean, if we had 6 significant deficiencies, there's no reason why a year later we should have any in effect, unless it was actually physically impossible to fix.
Staffing issues.
Yeah, but it would seem to me that you'd want that action plan for all the deficiencies, even though knowing at the end of that review period or that next period where you had an opportunity to correct it, you'd still have the notation, staffing issue, the council has been advised and it understands the issue, or whatever that end result would be. But
and that's exactly why you need an outside group to do that, right. So that it requires those kind of answers, because it will require Linda and me to think about it again.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to set it aside and move on to something else.
So I think what we're going to try and do as an audit committee over the next several years and into the future is whoever's on the audit committee on behalf of the council will be more active in perhaps having these checklists, these benchmarks, so when we get the audit report and we try and look to staff as to what their plan is, the audit committee then reports that back to the council, so the council can ask questions and we could have that interaction that way. So in looking at that process for the future, I guess would July be a good month to have that interim meeting to perhaps start talking about how we're going to benchmark and do the checklist? Because I'm thinking, since this is new to everyone, perhaps we can think about a meeting in July without having the actual you folks here, but perhaps you could talk with our staff in between and have a discussion as an audit committee as to what kind of benchmark checklist process we want to establish for the current year and moving into the future, and perhaps get some documents together that we can share with the council at some point to see if that's something they're comfortable with.
Have to be late July. I'm gone from the 4th to
Late July would be, I'm trying to gauge it with respect to September and when you guys will be. I think late July will be fine.
You know what you made me think of too, David, is if you do that and you have a really good handle on, you know, okay, so there's 5 problems, is it even within reach to cure 4 of them in the upcoming year, you can feed that back into the goal setting session where the obligation on the part of the council comes in is you can't just say to finance, we want you to fix 1, 2, 3, and 4. You've got to be saying to finance, we want you to fix 1, 2, 3, and 4, and here's, you know, we've heard you loud and clear why those didn't get fixed last year. Yep. Here's the additional resources you need to fix those.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, it's basically just an empty effort to try to do it again.
So what we're doing is we're definitely a good idea. We're connecting this process to our responsibility as a council in setting council goals, which the staff has to implement as part of their ongoing day-to-day activities. So it kind of puts it all together. So,
do you think something else that we would want to look at is, I mean, I realize that there was a heck of a glitch because a year we're too short-staffed, and then David got sick and was out forever. Look at a way to prevent that stumble? I mean, I realize it's going to take staff, but I just wondered if there should be a contingency plan, like, oh, God help, or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
No one's allowed to get sick.
Right. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, if we look at a long term, or we look at a possible
and that
emergency.
And I think that is something with the new staff that we are looking at. One thing that we have done is we're hiring someone who Phil has more experience, can possibly not only take things off my shoulders, but hopefully, as David and I have talked about, when one or both of us leave, that this person can possibly move in.
Right.
So with that idea, we're hoping to train them and give them.
Well, I wasn't mentioning that either of you might leave.
That's like 10 or 20 years away.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. About 3 weeks. Let's see, he's coming June 1, we'll be gone June 2.
Actually, when I first got here, it was the one thing I said, okay, look, because of her particular situation and mine, I says, the one thing that has to be done is that Linda and I can't leave within a year of each other.
Right.
It would not be right. I mean, to me, it would be an absolute indication of a poor ability to plan.
Right.
And we think we have somebody, you never know, we think we have somebody who could move, who seems to have the auditing detail ability that I really don't have, and yet has the educational background stuff, who could really move in. Because to leave this city without Linda and me, and I'm not trying to personalize it, but you've got two experienced people and then a lot of inexperience below, and so I get sick, and you know I was out for 8 weeks earlier. I get sick and she can retire in 3 years, and you're looking at somebody who can't begin to fill the position.
No, what happened is if both of you retired, we'd probably have to contract out your services to get the new person up to speed. We'd be doing that anyway.
So I mean, we're really trying to...
And I've seen that happen before in other organizations.
Things, but to position the city for the future.
I know, that's good.
We're really trying to do that.
That's wonderful that you are, because it would... The financial department, the city would be a big lurch without to the two of you. So,
but
yeah.
the more you get into a more... industry standard computerized system, the better you are to recruit for people right. that understand that and could make that transition.
And see, there are many cities our size, a little bit larger, a little bit smaller, use the same financial system. That was part of the criteria, because you're more likely, if you do hire from outside, you're more likely to get somebody at least can come into a financial system. What we had wasn't a financial system, it was a disgrace. You have three different systems that don't talk to one another. I mean, nobody can function in that environment. So that was one of the things we were looking at too.
So was there anything else you guys wanted to bring to our attention as part of the preliminary field work?
I don't think so. We'll still have an extra conference with them just to kind of talk about, you know, timeline and making sure we're on the same page for final. But as far as out of committee, I don't think anything comes up.
Does everyone feel that we've got our questions answered, at least for the time
being?
I
just wanted to make sure before I leave that I'm hearing that we're doing okay, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So,
are we still looking sometime in July-ish?
So my thought is perhaps in late July we can tentatively think about having another audit committee meeting, and between now and then perhaps you can work with the auditors and come up with some preliminary benchmarking, monitoring types of checklists that we can start looking at to see if it works for us, and then that meeting can maybe be centered around coming up with a recommendation to take back to the council, and if they like it, then we can start putting that into
the other thing place. I'd like to ask, and if he agrees to it, is have Mark permit.
No, well, Mark, under our ordinance, it's a three-member audit committee, but Mark's an alternate, but alternates, if they can be here, should be here every time, just in case someone can't be here.
And we still want to have one of the citizens.
Mark's an alternate for all three of us. Whether it's, we're all, even though it's two council members and a citizen member, you're an alternate for whoever can't be here.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think, Mark, if you could be here, it's great, even if all four of us here.
I would just say all three of you, if you know you're not going to be able to go, as soon as you know that, just pop me an email and I'll instantly write it down on my calendar.
And even if we all three are here, I think you should still make it if you can.
That's true, because we can always have the three. Yeah.
It just keeps them in the information loop. Yeah.
It does. It's good.
We have to talk to each other. So, I mean, he has to have a key component. He's going to be subbing for somebody. Yeah.
So anyway, so the alternate is always going to have an open invitation to be here, even if all three of us are here, because it's good practice.
Are you guys comfortable making an appointment now in July, or do we want to wait?
Oh, they won't be. They won't be part of it.
No, you guys.
I have to get my calendar. I'm not ready yet.
Okay.
Perhaps we can get something sent out, Linda. Give us some dates. And we want to work around where you're going to
be. Yeah, I won't be back. I'll be gone July 4th through the 19th.
Okay, well, last week or two in July we'll be looking at.
Perfect. Yeah. It's just that my calendar literally gets booked out 18 months.
Well, let's send something out. You know, we do that with the retirement trustees meetings.
Something
out.
Yeah.
Well,
I do. Take three times.
And that's going to be enough time? I mean,
yes.
Get something together for us.
Well, I was September just wondering if, I don't know if this has any bearing on when you would start to do that in July, but is there any value in having like previous fiscal year more or less wrapped up to sort of have a better
glimpse? July and August are the years you have it at the must that we close it out.
Yeah.
I always take the week of July 4th off.
So like late July sometimes?
Late July, we'll be able to do that okay.
Yeah.
And you could even, at that point, you know, you're looking at 2 months before we're back, you could make sure, you know, you could ask about the audit process and closing books, maybe at the end of July, and see if there's any issues that they're running into, or to make sure they're moving along.
So that's good timing. Good. Yep. Well, good. Well, looks like we've covered a lot of stuff here today. So with that, I guess we'll just go ahead and adjourn the meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for being here, everyone.
Yeah, nice to meet everybody.
I have a few business cards here if anyone wants to.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome to contact me.